It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
All right, welcome to the show. Yelp, Scott, Yelp.
Yelp was the word of the day Friday.
It was. Let me see if I got this thing straight. It is a provider of online local search capabilities for its visitors. I'm looking at Wikipedia's site. And you basically can go look for a website. You can go look for a business, ratings, all that. Find it from where you are.
Find somebody to cut your hair.
Yep.
Pizza
which,
place.
Which is very good. So we're talking about that because they just did an IPO, and it's a lot of noise about Yelp and what's all about. I had to look it up. Because it's new. And, you know, it brings me to the point of, I don't think you should invest in stuff that you don't know what it is. No matter what it is. If you can't explain it to somebody else easily, I don't think you should invest in it.
Yeah, particularly if you can't explain where their revenue comes from. That's the most important thing.
Well, we're just diving right into You Know What It Is.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
So welcome to the show, Scott.
Ching.
So besides Yelp, yeah. We know they're doing their IPO is, you know, going gangbusters. And
yeah, IPO came out on Friday, priced before the launch at $15 a share. And what that means is that if you are an insider or you're part of the
original
the original deal gets it for $15 and then it goes out on the market and it subsequently shot up about 60% as soon as it hit the market.
Wow. So that's up, what, $9? So that's around $25 a share?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. I did. I got some math training.
That values Yelp at about $900 million or so.
That's interesting because Google back in 2009, also according to my friends over here at Wikipedia, had made an offer for $500 million. So I guess it's good that they held on and did their own
IPO. Yeah, but now they have to deal with being a public company, which is a whole other ball of wax.
That's a whole other ball of wax. Well, so I gave Scott for our show today, I gave him this huge stack of stuff, and we're going to get to as much as we can because... Even though the market's a little bit quiet right now, nothing really too exciting going on except for Yelp, except for that, underneath all of that, there's that quiet storm. A lot of stuff going on. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, there's a fair amount of stuff going on. Also in corporate news on Friday, Shutterfly, the company Shutterfly is an online photo company. They made the news after they agreed to buy Kodak, now bankrupt Kodak's, online business for $24 million.
That's probably pretty smart.
I mean, it's got a terrific name recognition, and I'm sure they already have the infrastructure built. So I thought that was big news. I was glad to see poor old Kodak get a little bit of good news. As far as the rest of the markets go on Friday, the Dow was down about 3 points, stayed under 13,000 at the close of the week. S&P down 4, NASDAQ down 13. Gold, another little bit of a drop on gold. Remember Wednesday we had a big sell-off in gold. Gold down $9 on Friday's trade at $17.13. Oil down $2 at the close on Friday to $106. The story that we talked about on Friday's show...
Is that the pipeline?
About the pipeline turned out to be false.
Are you kidding me?
I saw pictures before we came into the radio studio. I had seen some pictures of it, and it looked like somebody just... I don't know, set some newspaper on fire out in the woods or something.
They just let off a couple of M80s and that was it.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And then looking at the week ahead, it is a fairly busy week looking forward. ISM non-manufacturing on Monday. Tuesday, we get some earnings from Dick's Sporting Goods and Pandora. I'll be interested to see if Pandora is making any money. I suspect they are not. Wednesday, we get mortgage applications, which I know we want to talk about today. And then a slew of jobs reports starts on Wednesday, the ADP private employment report. On Thursday, we get our weekly jobless claims number. And then Friday is the big non-farms payroll number from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So
that's
lots of jobs.
That's the one we want to see.
Yeah, lots of jobs news next week.
ADP is interesting. You know, they process payroll for a lot of companies. Basically take care of all the payroll function so that businesses, small businesses especially, don't have to fuss with that. You know, when we first started, I used a similar service. But now we have our own controller and accounting department. But this something that they are able to see. They have their boots on the ground, so to speak, and they can keep track of what's going on with the employment.
And they go out and do a survey, so that their number comes from a survey. The difference between the ADP survey and the Friday number is that the ADP survey is strictly private jobs, no government jobs included.
So is it more, it's more of a closer to the front lines or closer to where the action is, and you get a more accurate read maybe of what's going on with private businesses as opposed to being distorted by government jobs.
Yeah, I think it's a better economic gauge, yes.
Okay. Very good, Scott. All right. What do you want to go to next?
Well, there's still a lot. I know Lisa's going to start waving her flag at us, but we can talk about oil. There's some interesting stuff going on in oil. There's some interesting stuff going on with mortgage refinancing. So we can talk about all that. We can talk about what China's doing with the dollar.
Let's do all that. We'll come right back. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read. You'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Innovative, that's what we are here. And let's talk about mortgages. Scott and I were talking during that very lengthy break about mortgage refinancing. And give them the skinny on what you were just sharing with me about the numbers first, and then we'll talk about what this HARP program's all about.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about how mortgage applications are up quite a bit, but I think a lot of people don't realize that included in that number are these HARP refinances. It's the Home Affordable Refinance Program, which is designed to help people who are underwater on their mortgage refinance at a lower rate and maybe save some money on their monthly payment.
And it's specifically for people who have their loans owned or guaranteed by Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. And if you may recall from the other day on the show, I gave you a number which was very interesting that these two quasi-governmental agency entities who are backed by the federal government own 50% of all mortgages. So, you know, it's a good chance, you got a 50-50 chance that your mortgage, if you are current on your payments, but if you want to look at maybe if you have less than 20% equity or worse, you know, if you're upside down even, right, Scott, upside down?
Yep.
That you could maybe take advantage of this refinance opportunity, which is pretty cool because you could lower your payments.
Average savings is about $250 a month.
That's pretty good.
Well, that makes a difference.
You could even say, no, I'll take the low rate and keep making the same payment if you wanted to. So, but anyway, Moody's Analytics expects that 1.6 million HARP refis will occur by the end of 2013, saving borrowers that $250 you're talking about per month.
Yeah, that's an interesting number behind the number. So when you see mortgage applications are up significantly, it doesn't necessarily mean people are going crazy to buy houses. It may just mean people are taking advantage of this HARP program.
And there's a lot more to come because 57% of first loans on homes are still above that 5% rate. And the average rate now is like 4%. So yeah, there could be a lot more of that.
Yep.
Now I think it's great that, I mean, even though it's, you know, kind of numbers behind the numbers that maybe the mortgage apps aren't as many as we think, the fact that people can refi and they, you know, a lot of people are not going to continue to make the same payment. They're going to make the lower payment.
Right.
So that's going to free money up for them to pay off credit cards or to spend.
Or to spend on filling their tank.
Well, what's going on with gas?
You know, it's this thing with Iran is going to come to a head pretty quickly. President Obama is meeting with Prime Minister Netanyahu. They're going to talk about maybe some more pressure they can put on Iran. Vehicle sales came out, and basically it said the U.S. car buyer doesn't really care if gas is $4 a gallon.
Yeah, I think the magic number now is $5. I think if as long as it stays in that four range or a little less, and automakers report out, USA Today had a report out, automakers sold 16% more new cars and trucks year over year from February of last year.
Yeah, I think there are two things to consider there, though. First, people are keeping their cars longer than ever. The average lifespan of the car on the road now is at its longest period ever.
Well, and half of these new car sales, there's 50% of them have a trade-in, and those cars that are traded in are at least on average six years old.
Yeah, which is pretty old. And the other thing to consider is that we have talked about consumer sentiment and consumer confidence numbers. They are significantly better than they were a year ago.
Well, and a lot of the car loans being made, you know, there's a lot of loans being done still, but as a whole, people's credit scores are lower. The average credit score is lower. So that tells you that they're not being real tight on credit.
Yeah, loosening up on car credit.
So that's some encouraging thing. And the thing that really stuck out to me on this report, Scott, is that that one of the biggest gainers, which is so contrarian to this thing about gas, one of the biggest gainers was the big Chevrolet Suburban SUV. And they had a 39% increase from last year. So that's a big thing to fill up. Those things only get, I have a similar vehicle, and I think I get maybe 13 to 16, I think around 15, 16 miles to the gallon. They're pigs.
It's counterintuitive for sure. It makes me wonder how much price slashing and incentivizing the dealers did.
Could be that. Also could be simply that some of those trade-ins are people with families and they've held on as long as they can.
Yeah.
But the kids are getting bigger
and
they need more room and they've got friends and they got soccer balls and they got I know all about it.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. Another interesting story I saw, David, that I thought we should talk about is the Greek deal, whether or not it triggers the insurance payouts.
I knew you'd want to talk about this because you love credit default swaps.
I do. I really do.
Do you have that with milk in the morning? Or
no, but I do love them. And this whole thing, the whole story behind the story here is that you can buy insurance on whether or not Greece defaults, but it's up to this panel to decide whether or not it's actually a payable event.
Isn't that nice?
So everybody thinks Greece has defaulted by doing this swap and basically saying, well, we'll give you 25 cents on the dollar. To me, that sounds like a default.
A default to me.
But the 15-member panel says, no default. If you hold the insurance, just keep holding the insurance and maybe you will default later.
Try that with your local bank. They'll tell you it's a default. I'm only going to pay you 25 cents on the dollar.
Yeah, that's a default.
All right. Well, we've got more to share with you. This is good stuff. Isn't it riveting? Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. What's your dream? Play golf every day of the week? Turn that hobby into a new career? With careful planning, you can make it happen. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your no-obligation consultation. At Holland Financial, we want to help you take the first step towards making your dreams a reality. That number again is 888-747-7526.
All right, we're back. And on the break, I was stumping Scott with one of this new reports out about China is not... Their reserves, this FX. What's the FX, Scott? What is that?
Foreign exchange.
Foreign exchange. So what does that mean? Is that like a big bucket they hold all of this money in that they've got?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of China, the government, it's their money?
Yeah.
They have a surplus?
Yeah, China is different in that way, in that they get a big piece of their GDP actually comes from investment of government-owned
assets.
Investments, assets, okay. Yeah.
So they take the cash that's... the government itself has a surplus cash that they buy stuff with.
Yep.
So...
they buy treasuries, they buy Japanese bonds, they buy European bonds, they buy like an investor buys.
And so they really have their own... what is it up to? $3 trillion investment fund. Is that like a sovereign wealth fund?
Yeah. It's okay. The same idea.
Okay. So the Chinese government, which is the Communist Party, right? That's all the same, right?
Right.
So they have a $3 trillion war chest that they've used to buy all sorts of stuff. Now, it used to be U.S. dollars, U.S. securities and things held up was a very large percentage. Now, it's down to a little over 50%.
Yeah, it used to be close to two-thirds. I think there could be a couple reasons for this. First of all, if you are holding a ton of treasuries and you've seen what has happened to them in the last, let's call it, year, you might want to take the profit and go ahead and get out of them and redeploy that capital elsewhere.
Well, one of the other challenges that China is facing right now in order to try to feed its people but also feed the growth to sustain its economy, they're taking a lot of that money, I suspect, also in this war chest to fund their own development, infrastructure, right? And also funding the development of businesses. And
they have supported a lot of business, a lot of construction, a lot of that stuff.
So where we have in the United States a partial ownership of GM by our government.
That's right.
That's kind of an exception.
Yes.
But in China, it's really commonplace, right?
It really is. There's a lot of government-sponsored business there. So that definitely makes a difference. They also have said that they have been pretty clear in their support of the European Union and have said, listen, we can buy. I mean, we'll buy plenty more if we need to. So,
well, and we don't mind. So they're diversifying out. I don't think that they're selling gobs of U.S. stuff. They're just not buying as much.
Well, if they are selling it, the Fed may be buying it. Somebody's buying it, because if they were selling it like crazy, then we'd see a big change in prices, which we haven't seen.
So they're not really maybe not selling off as a lot as much as just not buying as much. And so they're,
it could be maturing.
Yeah, maturing, and then they're doing a lot with Europe, like you said. So it's interesting. I think the story here is that we aren't necessarily hooked on China, so to speak. In other words, we've seen the amount that they're buying of our treasuries maybe not be as strong, but there's plenty of people that will buy. And you've seen that with the previous auctions of U.S. treasuries at 3-to-1 or so ratio.
Yeah, the bids to cover are usually about 3, and 10 years closed on Friday's market at 198, so yields are still really, really low.
Well, the last thing we got to talk about before I let you go to get to work, Scott, is you got to talk about this this new fiscal treaty that the European states are going to sign, or they did sign.
Most of them are going to sign.
Most of them sign.
Yeah, they don't all want to sign it. It's a big treaty designed to force countries to live within their means.
Well, my first and obvious question, is there any way we can sign up for that?
I don't think so. Can you imagine if we signed up for that? People go crazy. The Europeans are going to tell us how to spend our money. Nobody tells us how to spend our money except us, and we just don't know how to do it.
Yeah, nobody tells us how to break the bank.
That's right. So Britain and the Czech Republic decided not to sign this agreement, and which causes some concern that maybe the thing will collapse. But, you know, there are so many agreements, and I think so many of them are unenforceable, that a lot of this is just, I think, political positioning.
I think it's a good excuse to get together and have lunch catered in. That's what I think.
It could be. Poor Chancellor Merkel had a lunch catered in the other day and had a whole tray of beer spilled on her. Did you see that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the waiter got a little nervous and he dropped the whole tray right
away. Wow. Well, hey, things, accidents happen. I hope she handled it well.
She handled it quite well.
Well, that's interesting. You know, Britain has never really gone along with a lot of this. Oh, the other thing that was interesting I was going to mention in this story, where is it? I can't find it quickly. Anyway, the point is that this is another layer of rules. And oh, I know what it was. It was that you can't spend too much money for these fiscal things that go on. You got to be careful. You got to be prudent. You got to live within your needs. But if you have an extreme recession or other unforeseeable circumstances, you don't have to follow the rules then.
Well, you know, just to give you an idea,
it's all these exceptions to the rule.
And just to give you an idea of how unenforceable these things are, the Prime Minister of France came out Friday morning and he said, listen, I know we agreed to a budget deficit of 4.4%, but it's going to be 5 and change, so just so you know.
Yeah, and it'll be okay, though. Can we agree to that now?
Yeah, don't worry.
Let's just agree to that.
It'll all be fine.
All right, Scott, you're very agreeable. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Get to work.
All
and
right.
When we come back, I'm going to talk about planning for small business owners, their lack of retirement planning, a study found from USA Today. And before you go, hold on. Retiree withdrawal syndrome. How much should you live on? The 4% rule. Is it really a rule? Does it make sense? Stay tuned.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
This is your 2-minute warning.
Oh, it is. And small business owners, fellow small business owners, I'm right there with you. The lack of retirement planning can be a real problem for you. Study out by, or report out from USA Today, talking about some of the challenges that small businesses face. A lot of small businesses over the last several years have been focused on just surviving and retooling, revamping, restructuring, changing what they need to change to adapt to the new conditions of the market and the economy and slow down and the labor market and a housing market, all these things. Can I go on and on? Yeah, I could. There's a lot that small businesses have to deal with. And the reality of that is a lot of small businesses have difficulty planning their own retirement. And so my message to you, if that's you, small business owner, is to try to have a plan to where you not only take care of running your business and taking care of your people, employees, if you have them, but also to develop a plan so you can make sure, just in case, you have money laid up for the future. I talked on the yesterday's show, actually, about taking that financial football and throwing it to yourself in the future. So you want to start laying money up. And the best time to do that is when things are going better and going well. So as the economy improves, and I actually am a skeptical, cynical optimist. I think things are going to improve. I'm not sure quite how we're going to get there yet. But I think that we're seeing, you know, we talked about auto sales improving, we talked about these different things that are looking better, and unemployment is starting to slowly go down. It needs to go down quicker, but it's still going down. As things improve, keep this in the back of your mind. Take some of the money, some of the growth, some of the things that are going well, and try to set it aside and put it into retirement accounts. Take that money, try to put it for things to happen in the future. And there are definitely ways to do that. You just got to have a plan to do that so that when things are going well, be careful not to use all that up in terms of maybe lifestyle or also with the business itself. Try to diversify a little bit. You know, as business owners, we know our business best. I know my business a lot more than I know about Yelp's IPO. I can tell you everything you want to know about my business, but we've got to look beyond just the four corners or the four walls we're in with the business and diversify, because what if regulations change? What if, you know, something could change regulatory-wise that could have a big impact on my business, for example, or there could be something that affects your business if you're a business owner. What if you have new competitors? What if you can't work? That's a big one. Do you have disability insurance? What if something happens to you? How does your family going to make ends meet? Do you have life insurance? Do you have enough? These are things to be thinking about and to make sure they're in place, because the thing that we can't depend on is being able to run the business forever. So, and I'm speaking to you, but I'm also speaking to myself. And this is something that I think about very often. How do I make sure I've got enough for my own retirement? I don't have any plans to retire anytime soon, but how do I make sure I'm going to have what I need? Well, the way you do that is by having a plan. If you don't have a lot of employers, small businesses, about a third don't have a 401k or a SEP or an IRA. So you can't keep it all in the business, because eventually you're going to look to other sources of income when you retire. I have my mom's family. They had she had an uncle that had a business, and I used to see and hear how they invested for years in that business, and it just was, you know, that was their investment, and they, you know, they saw that as their way to retire, and they kept reinvesting. Well, you've got to be really careful, because what if something happens to that business or that particular type of business they're in? They did okay. But what if somebody came along and you had put everything you had into the business and never diversified, and somebody came along and set up a very competitive business, or a big competitor with all kinds of capital came in? Or what if something happens with regulations, as I said earlier? There's so many things that can go wrong. You've got to diversify away from yourself. I know it seems counterintuitive, but you've got to diversify against yourself so that if things don't go right, you've got other places to go. All right. Now, speaking of other places to go, we can take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about this whole rule that's being discussed, this 4% withdrawal rate for investing, and why or why not that may make sense for you. So stick around.
Creating a world with less cancer takes a team effort. It takes survivors and caregivers and regular folks like you and me, who all unite at Relay for Life. This year, nearly 4 million people nationwide will come together to celebrate, remember, and fight back. We're the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. Visit us at relayforlife.org.
The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
All right, we are ready to declassify this. And here's the declassification for today for your top secret information. There's this rule that's been around called the 4% withdrawal rate or 4% withdrawal rule. And let me first say, it's not a rule. It's a guideline. There are all these kinds of rules that are out there in the financial world related to your retirement. You know, the rule of 100, the rule of 4% withdrawal rate, the statistic that two-thirds of retirees or people are going to need long-term care. These are all guidelines and rules. You should have X number of X number of time your salary for life insurance. You can retire and live on 75% of your pre-retirement income. They're all rules and guidelines, but they aren't really rules. They're just there to serve as a starting point. And I have seen people get really beside themselves and upset and frustrated by some of these rules because they don't apply to their situation. They're like, what's wrong with me? It's not your fault. It's that these are just general rules. And the media is famous for this. I call it drive-by advising because they aren't financial people. They're journalists or they're reporters, and they do a few interviews and they get put together an article, and they are, at best, they are just ideas for you to take and say, okay, this article talked about annuities. This article talked about long-term care. Now let me go find somebody I can talk to that actually knows what they're doing with this subject. So this 4% rule, it came about, there's a guy that came up with this a few years back, and William Bengen, who publishes research back in 1994 in the Journal of Financial Planning. That's a magazine for financial planner people. Most regular folks would find it very dry, but it's something that financial people read. And it was a study that he did that said, well, if you take 4% out of your money every year in retirement, there's a good chance you won't run out. Well, the problem or the thing that concerns me about that is it might mean that in order to do that, if you're only drawing 4% to get the income you need, either you might have to have, in order for that rule to work, you might have to delay your retirement way too far. In other words, it may mean you have to accumulate too much. I had somebody come in the other day, and she had been told she needed this huge number to retire, and it was all based on this 4% rule. And I did planning and advising with her, and I found out she needed half of what this rule these rules of thumb said. So I don't like these things. I think rules are good. I'm a conformist. I think rules are good, but I don't think when it comes to your money that you should just use these rules as gospel. And so what makes sense isn't a rule, it's actual individualized planning. That's why I'm not a big fan of the software that's out there on the internet. You know, garbage in, garbage out. There's this financial planning software has been around forever. As a financial planner, I've looked at the software for over 15 years, and I have never found software that will do the job of an Excel spreadsheet and actually getting in there. And so when I do a plan for somebody, me and my team, I know what those numbers are. It's not a black box. Well, I hope that software gave me the right number. Hey, you need $400,000. Well, that's what the black box says. Well, I'd rather use the Excel box. I'd rather be able to see those spreadsheets and get in there and understand how those numbers work. So this rule of 4%, it's just kind of a starting point. What I think makes more sense for people, and I'm in preach mode, you can tell, I think what makes more sense is that if you can wait a little longer to retire right now, wait a little longer. You've got to make sure you've got Medicare coverage. You want to make sure that you're not dealing with the 62 rule about not being able to have too much in income. I think that if you can take advantage of the resources you have, get independent, sound, experienced, educated advice, you'll go a lot further. And you need to protect your nest egg. You need to make sure that you have what you need to see you all the way through. The thing that people need to be very careful about is just not pulling the trigger too soon. And these rules of taking, you can take 4% out no matter what. Well, if your portfolio drops, you take 4%, that's a lot less money you take out that year. It may not be enough to meet your income needs. Well, then what? Well, you have to take more than the 4%. You got to be practical with these rules And the way you do that is by doing the planning. So you can see, okay, look, I'm going to draw this much a year. Here's how I'm going to draw it. And then I can feel confident. I know how long my money will last, even if things don't go well. All right. I'm seeing a flashing light. That means I'm out of time. Thank you for listening, and I hope you join me next time.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.